Welcome to Goals Question Time, where I interview leading executives driving innovation, venturing, and strategic change.
So today for Goals Question Time, I've got the pleasure of being with Nick Redfern from Rouse. Hi, Nick.
Hi, good afternoon.
Hi. So, Nick, we've known each other for quite a few years working in the innovation space. And so it'd be great. I'm looking forward to discussing you around intellectual property and what's happening there with new technologies. So great. Could you kick off and introduce yourself, please?
Great. Thank you. My name's Nick Redfern. I'm an intellectual property consultant. I work for a firm called Rouse. Rouse is a specialist IP firm. We have six divisions: trademarks, patents, enforcement, commercial, litigation, and consulting. We're a global firm, so we've got 18 offices in 14 different jurisdictions or locations, countries, and then about 800 staff, the largest part of which are in Asia, and I'm based in Asia. I live in Indonesia.
Great, great. Yeah, and I've done some work with you in the past in Asia and China, and the boom and the energy that's going on there. Great. We might touch on a bit later on that as well. But let's get back to the basics. Intellectual property, intellectual assets. Could you give us a brief sort of definition of those for the broader sort of startup and corporate community that listen to our podcast?
So let's use the term intangible assets. All of the value-adding ideas in a business, essentially. Intellectual property is the legal iterations of those that can be defined, captured, used, put in contracts, lawsuits filed over, etc. So intellectual property is a subset of intellectual assets. And I'll give you an example. If you look at the valuations of corporate transactions or listed companies, you'll see something called goodwill, which was probably a very large chunk of the business. You can't really isolate that and identify it, but you can get to the underlying brands, trade secrets, and other intellectual property. So they're a sort of a subset of all of the totality of intangibles that most businesses use to be successful these days.
Great, great. And how are you seeing technology and business change sort of impacting these areas of intellectual assets?
Well, many years ago when I started work in this field, you know, technology was the sort of hard physical device type stuff driven by patents. So the pharmaceutical industry, the electronics, semiconductor industry, they were the big tech players. Today, the big tech players are data crunchers, algorithm creators, all kinds of soft technology, if I can put it that way, that isn't usually protected by patents. It's often protected by trade secrets and copyrights, a different type of sort of intellectual property protection from the traditional technology fields.
Yeah, so we're seeing companies like the Apples of the world, the Teslas of the world, you know, the physical things aren't physically much different, are they, to the other devices that come out from companies, but that goodwill and those assets are so much more valuable on top.
The brain power is really in the software rather than the hardware these days. That's right.
Mm. One other change that's been happening that I know Rouse has been doing stuff around is the climate change impact, you know, carbon reporting and that within there. And that's another angle again on the intellectual assets sort of point of view. And there's what sort of impact is this climate change reporting and that having within your space?
Well, just as with, let's say, a corporation's wider climate footprint, people want to know what is the footprint of intangible assets in terms of carbon output. And there are some preliminary models. We have one called ClipMate, which are starting to calculate the carbon impact of intellectual property activities. At the moment, they're still relatively early, but the one we built is sort of being developed slowly. And we want to take it from just the intellectual property activities out to the wider entire creative process within a business and understand the carbon impact of that. You can obviously, the reason for doing that at the moment will be to buy carbon offsets, but then to understand how to minimize that at a later date will also be useful.
Yeah. And one of the other interesting aspects that some of your team have written about recently is the whole reporting through the value chain, because we know Scope one is the impact of your carbon impact sort of within your own business. Scope two is your sort of suppliers. But managing that whole supply chain and then the use of your customers, if you're going to be reporting those sorts of things, what sort of things should we be considering? Because you could be giving away a lot of your intellectual know-how in who your suppliers are and what your formulas are and stuff like that. What are the thoughts that your team have had on that?
Yeah, I mean, there's a question about trying to identify the supplier network that are involved in the intellectual property from creation to the sort of final stages of the use of the intellectual property, perhaps even disposal. There are quite a lot of different third parties that are involved in that supply in the supply chain. So identifying that's important. But of course, you know, a lot of this can be done through an automated calculation system, and then hopefully the data can be kept relatively confidential that way. So trying to build that structure is one of the industry's sort of questions at the moment.
Great, great. So over the years, Rouse has been driving innovation, engaging people with it sort of within the business. Could you give some examples of innovation drives or things that have come from initiatives you've been doing now within Rouse?
Yes, well, we've I think going right back to the 1990s, we've tried to innovate far more perhaps than a traditional law firm might. I can give one example, which is back in about 1999, we began to work on the idea of trademark databases, and that then morphed into an idea which our founder then took off and with a couple of large corporations turned it into what is now one of the largest trademark management tools in the world called Anaqua. I mean, we left that many, many years ago, but that's an example of a seed that came out of Rouse that turned into a much bigger idea. So we've had a lot of ideas over the years, and we want to try to build more of those that give value to clients, especially if we can automate certain processes in the intellectual property space. So very recently we ran an innovation drive where we put ideas or put the word out to our team around the world to come up with ideas, and we pulled in, I think it was a dozen or so in total. There was then a short list down to 6 or 10, I forget the exact number, and then down to 3 final winners at a sort of firm-wide video call at the end of March. So that was quite exciting. It was quite a lot of fun to do it. You know, we had people saying coming up to us afterwards saying they hadn't seen something like that in a firm like ars before. Some of the newer people that didn't know Rouse as well. So it was kind of fun to do. It brought lots of interesting ideas out. Now, of course, we've got 3 ideas which we've committed to actually implement, and we're now working on that with various people, IT and business people, who are looking at it, looking at the 3 ideas to try and get those rolled out.
And the engagement across the firm, across the different regions, and across the different departments, that was quite a benefit in that from the process, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, some of the ideas are things that will work in the core business, and then some of the ideas were things that maybe are not part of Rouse's core business and might be something that could be developed, maybe partner with somebody else, spun out. That was the idea, was to give it a wide brief so that people could choose their own kind of pathway, whether it was close to what they're doing on a day-to-day basis or something completely different.
Okay, great, great. And just on that, you mentioned earlier about your focus in Asia is quite a bit with quite a large team and that within China. Are you seeing any particular things happening there within the Asia region that us maybe from the UK and the West that sort of aren't seeing as much sort of change because the growth of the likes of Alibaba, the growth of
Yeah.
the financial transactions and that sort of within China, what sort of new things are you seeing coming from Asia?
I think definitely the e-commerce space. I mean, obviously Amazon dominates the Western world, but Ali dominates the eastern side of the the eastern hemisphere of the planet. It both is the giant of China, and it owns Lazada, the largest player in Southeast Asia, or I think the second largest now in Southeast Asia. So Alibaba's, you know, they're trying all kinds of things. We've worked with them on IP valuation, on automated trademark filing, all kinds of things, and they're kind of energetic in putting out new ideas, looking for things that will work and develop. And you know, China has scale in many, many ways that perhaps countries elsewhere do not have, and so there's a lot of things that people are looking to automate, and you know, from trademark filing to you know, banking, all kinds of things.
Yeah, and it's interesting seeing the debates recently about Elon Musk thinking of doing a payment platform on Twitter, for example. And you and I know from Alipay and WeChat Pay going
Absolutely.
back probably nearly
It's
10 years ago now. And everybody
exactly.
was doing that in China sort of 10 years ago. And it's like, oh, wouldn't
Yeah,
that be a nice idea? I think
I
Amazon would.
remember more than 5 years ago being laughed at for trying to buy a train ticket with actual money in China.
So a big change that's happening at the moment we're seeing with artificial intelligence, which has been brought to life, of course, by ChatGPT and the other variants and that out there. How do you think that's going to be impacting your business, the whole business processes of the companies you work with?
So there's a couple of different areas to think about. We're in a specialist area. I mean, intellectual property can be thought of as a subset of legal work. It's not quite the same, and there's a lot of areas which go outside legal work, but let's just call it that for the moment. But before we start getting into the sector and what's going on in the sector, it's worth just thinking about the difference between something like ChatGPT, which is a sort of general AI trained on the internet, everything out there, which means, it does some random things. I mean, it's very interesting. It can produce a lot of fun, but it's not entirely reliable. We all know that the internet is only half right. So, there's a lot of rubbish on there as well. And AI can't differentiate between, a doctoral thesis and a short story unless it's been given the detail of which is which. So there's a lot of risk with that kind of stuff. That means that we can't really take that as a tool for our industry because we're a specialized industry. So I think that's an initial thing to say. I'll explain why that's important in a moment. So I think if we just start off at the sort of general level, I mean, the legal industry itself is using AI already in a number of ways. Firstly, legal research, that this has been around actually for quite some time, and there have been I think AI developments before ChatGPT. There was a tool called Ross, which was I think that might have been, I forget who developed that, whether it was IBM or someone else, but anyway, that was developed as a legal research tool where you could ask it legal questions and it would give you answers. So that's now that was trained on specific legal tool and data rather than the internet, whereas ChatGPT is trained on the internet. Now, of course, the internet does now include vast amounts of legal research. So we'll come back to that because I think ChatGPT can pass a bar exam in many places now. But the point about this is that when you get very specific about the data that you're going to train the AI on, you end up with something much more valuable, I think. So legal research obviously is an area that AI is suitable for. Document generation, especially around contracts. The question really comes, what about legal advice? Can a chatbot like ChatGPT or any kind of trained chatbot give legal advice? I think that there's several problems there. One is that the legal world is very much, and the professional services world, let's say, divided between the kind of large commercial organizations seeking highly specific technical advice that they're going to rely on. And then maybe startups, SMEs that might just need loads of, they'll have lots of legal questions, but they're not necessarily absorbing them in to actually reduce their risk and take legal steps. They might be, but they might, I would say they, the small businesses, the startup community, might be a better user base for the kinds of AI that, or the kinds of chatbot AI that can be developed right now. So that's something I think which, that may change over time, but the short term, I think there's a huge opportunity for the smaller businesses to use something like that so they can essentially learn more about how the legal world will impact their business as they develop it, if that makes sense.
No, I agree with you. I think, I've used AI and been experimenting with a few clients and that at the moment. And the other thing I think is important to understand is the rate and speed of change of this. I go back to my time in the, that when you were talking about your example in the 90s, when I first saw the Netscape and Mosaic in the sort of the late 90s, I was saying to the corporates then I was employed by working that in. I said, like, guys, you need to look at this stuff. And it's, oh no, it's not going to affect our business. We don't go direct to customers, da 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 da. And I reflect back now on the feeling I had then and the feeling I have now with AI is like this thing is going to move at 10 times faster and is could impact 10 times on a much bigger scale. As you sort of said, there's general stuff there to help guide you through processes rather than having to read lots of books or trying to sort it out on the internet. And then training these apps on your particular data. So the data you now have around trademarks, the knowledge you have now from enforcement in particular areas, I think is going to be really interesting when you know how a particular product with a particular brand could be impacted in a particular region is
That's
your
right. That's right.
proprietary knowledge. And I think that stuff with the power of AI type tools is going to be so important for changing you know, the process and the clients that you work with.
Yeah, that's right. And I mean, let's take a specific example. One of the areas that is usually regarded as challenging for automation, or has been historically, is the trademark process. Now, there's a step of, first of all, checking whether a trademark is available and clear to use and register. And that is a sort of mixed science and art, which trademark attorneys do. Now, they probably don't like to hear this, but AI will replace that process, no question. Eventually, it will be able to do it much faster. Well, it'll be immediate. It'll take 10 seconds rather than a couple of weeks for those that kind of advice and decision to be made. Because it take it, at the moment, you have to go out and get lots of data in, sort through it manually, figure it all out, and then prioritize, and then figure out which ones are going to be a problem, which ones are not, and then answer the question: can I launch this trademark or this brand or not? That can definitely be automated. There are quite a few different steps in the trademark process that take place. And if you could try and build something that would do all of that, then the entire trademark application process could potentially be automated. It is going to take time. Governments have got to open up their trademark systems as well, and only a couple in the world have done so yet. But there are people in that space working on it already, and we've already seen the one or two that have launched in smaller countries. It's the SME markets that want it first. They're prepared to take the risk, if I can put it that way. So trademarks is definitely suitable. On the patent side, that's another area where it's a highly specialized area. Patents are created by a strange breed of person who's a mixture of a scientist and a lawyer. And patent attorneys have to analyze technology that forms the base on which a patent is supposed to be a patent or a new invention is based upon. Then they have to identify what's new and inventive and then write that into a document. Now, that is something as well which AI is already working on. There are already programs looking at, especially the what's called prior art search and analysis work, all of that filtering of past technologies, going out and finding every piece of prior art on a technology around the world, pulling it in, sorting it, and then identifying which is relevant to this new invention that's going to be subject of a patent. That's already something which can be done with AI. And then the next stage, the patent drafting, is the bit that's now coming.
I was involved in a 24-hour hackathon in Shoreditch, London, and that this past weekend. And when we were discussing there with a number of people, we were writing sort of different sort of quick codes. One of the participants there talked about a person who'd now put all this patent, publicly available patent information into their system, and they're churning that to create new ideas. So as you just talked about that process of what thing hasn't been done yet? Where are there gaps in that within the area? And looking for particular areas. And this, I think, is going to be fascinating in areas of things like new battery technologies for electric vehicles, new health sort of solutions, and sort of stuff like that. Where are these holes to be plugged and sort of stuff like that? So there's some fascinating stuff going to be, as you said in your first introduction to the AI, when it's trained for specific use cases. Those applications are going to be amazing. And back to the point I was making earlier, we've got the dot-com boom, which was like the early 2000s when there was just this platform. Now we're going to have this new platform with AI and its variations and that on it, which are going to impact lots of different industries.
We're going to your point about training AIs, and obviously the IP creation process. We've just talked about trademarks and patents, and there's others we could talk about. But one of the areas, a very large part of intellectual property work, is disputes, whether it's infringement, enforcement, all the different categories of IP dispute. When you talk about training AIs, of course, if you could get an AI and train it on all the court decisions in a particular country, particularly, that would enable you to start looking at predicting the results of disputes. Now that's going to get very, very interesting. We've heard people talking about this at a speculative level for a few years, and litigators will hate it because they are paid by their experience and skills in predicting whether their clients are going to win a dispute or not. Now, if you can then back that up with a predictive AI that's going to say, well, based on the 10,000 cases in this country, and then narrowing that down to the 4,000 trademark cases, and narrowing that down to the 4,000 or the 100 cases in this business sector, and then filtering it down, 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 you say there's a 70% chance of winning this case. At that point, business decisions can get made that are currently quite hard for companies. They've got to really take a leap of faith based on their outside lawyer's advice or and the business in that country, whether it's worth it. Whereas this can start to get some maths into the equation, which will help businesses make decisions.
And you're familiar with my image, Nick, of the three steps of going from the professional, be it sort of the consultant, the legal, the medical sort of doctor, and the next step is, okay, there's some computers being used to enhance it. And then the third step is, can these systems do the full sort of largely the process and that themselves? And as you said, in that enforcement case, you know, we're seeing now in back to China that these AI systems can be looking at the online places where knockoff products are being sold. You can be sending automatic enforcements. And as you said, getting to that point then of actually getting the rubber hitting the road, the smart lawyers and the smart sort of, you know, having to deal with the courts and sort of stuff like that is where the real value is added by people
Absolutely. I mean,
themselves.
yeah, Alibaba have got AI that they use to trawl their system looking for counterfeit goods on sale on their marketplaces from Tmall to Taobao to AliExpress and so on. But there's this sort of a little battle going on where the IP owners would like them to apply more AI to that and do more to identify these, because even with their AI technology, still the infringers find a way around it, and there are still large volumes of counterfeit goods up there. So yeah, there's a whole process going on there. All, in fact, not just in China, and all over the world, in South America with Mercado Libre, and in Southeast Asia with Lazada and Shopee and others, to try to use AI and technology to identify the red flags that tell you that somebody is potentially or suspicious, potentially offering a counterfeit goods.
So, Nick, I think we've covered a fantastic amount of ground there in the short time we've had. Thank you very much for sharing about Rouse and sharing about the importance of intellectual assets and IP.
Thank you very much.
Please like and subscribe for future editions.